So how did Jay George get involved in professional wrestling? How did that all begin?
I started probably, it was around 2013. I'd met someone at a show the year prior, and we just hit it off. We were in the front row together. We hit it off, and it went from there. It went to, I always wanted to do it as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I kept in touch with this guy, and then one day I ended up seeing him on a show. And I asked him, hey, man, you know, he had known we wanted to be wrestlers. You know, me and him were talking about wanting to be wrestlers. And I asked him, how did all that come about? And he told me about this place called Warriors Wrestling in Staten Island. And I went there, and it was literally in the middle of a garbage dump in Staten Island, which right away, that showed me about just how much I was like, ready to do this, because it didn't faze me. I was into the vibe. I was into the place. And from there, I went on and, started training, and the rest is, as they say, history.
So what kind of role has Joe Bellini had in your career? Like, how did he affect you from those days of training?
That's Uncle Joe right there. That's like kind of the best way I could describe him, because he was never like, I couldn't say he was like a father figure, but he was enough of, with his age and his experience, he was enough of, and, you know, with the authority of being my trainer and the head trainer at Warriors Wrestling, he was always a commanding voice for me. And he was always, you know, he's not afraid to be hard on his students when he has to be. But it was a combination of that and Logan Black, who you might know as well, who's mm-hmm. major influence. And they were kind of, there was a duality there with them, because they're in a lot of ways polar opposites, but they were major in shaping me and molding my career to where, you know, just from life lessons and just from teaching me the right way.
So what is the right way to train to become a professional wrestler? Like, if you had to give people advice about your journey and what you learned about yourself by doing this, what would you tell them?
Honestly, I think a lot of that is trial and error and making mistakes and learning from those mistakes, but having people to tell you that, you know, you've made those mistakes and how to correct them. And like, Joe would never be shy if he felt like I was working somewhere that was unfavorable or something. He'd not be shy to let me know. Or if I wanted to try out something weird and silly, Kate would be the first person to tell me, no, that's dumb and this is why it's not going to work. And sometimes I would not listen or whatever, and try it out anyway. And, you know, I realized, oh, wait a minute. These guys were right. But a lot of that just comes with the training. And he was trained, both those guys, Logan and Joe, were trained by Johnny Rods.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has obviously a plethora of guys that have come through the Gleason School. And they took what they learned from there, all the right fundamentals and the basics, you know, and they hammered those to me, where, you know, you've got to learn the basics, you got to learn how to walk before you can run. And that's, you know, it's been stuck with me ever since.
What was your first day of training like? Do you still remember?
I can't remember too vaguely. So I'd actually started too. I forgot to mention, but I actually had started in 2008. I trained for a little bit for a few months. And then the school ended up shutting down and I didn't have a car at the time. So it was hard for me to get around. And I kind of left that until I had graduated college. And once I graduated college, that's when I went to Warriors. But by the time I'd gone in there, I was, you know, I had been working out and stuff, so I was trying to make sure I could last through it. And I don't remember it being too, like, extraneous or anything. I just remember being really happy that I was finally stepping on this path.
What would you tell people is like the biggest concern for somebody that's like getting into this and doesn't know like what they're getting into? Like, what was the thing for you that like kind of was like, oh my God, it's like this? I didn't know that.
I mean, like when I first started, I guess it was the physical aspect, which a lot of people now a lot more people are more understanding of the physical demand of wrestling. Mm-hmm. You're never to be truly ready for it, because there's not a lot that could prepare you for it. But for me, a lot of it just came from once I started going out there, and you know, as I've come to learn, a lot of the issues are very, at the end of the day, they're all like political stuff and networking stuff, and that's, I think, way more of a shock to people than the physical aspect of it. Because people, you know, a lot of people now, they do football, baseball, they do sports and stuff usually before they come in, or they have some sort of athletic background or some sort of understanding of the physicality of wrestling, but the mental aspect of it is a whole nother, that's a whole nother shock.
How do you deal with, I mean, you're somebody that's gone through quite a lot emotionally from this. How do you deal with that on like an everyday basis? Like when people say things about you, how do you deal with that? How do you grow? How do you find a way to grow from that?
I mean, I think it helps the fact, like, you know, I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, I listen to a lot of your interviews and too, and you listen to other people's stories, and especially, you know, and you listen to other people's stories, you watch other people that have made it, and you realize that all that stuff it's common, it comes with the business, you know, it's not something that should ever, like, get you down, and I learned very quickly to use that to motivate me. And when I had my falling out with Tier 1, Dennis was very vocal in telling me things like, you know, I'm never going to make it anywhere. And, you know, he said in his interview with you that this is just a hobby for me and I'm not going to make it. The second he said that, I got booked internationally. I got booked into Canada for the first time. I got a high-profile booking in Chicago for freelance wrestling. And that just showed me that I could use that, all that negative energy, and turn it into positive energy. I think that's the biggest takeaway from it. Because people, like my situations and the stuff that I've dealt with so far is nothing compared to what, you know, some of the biggest stars in wrestling have had to deal with. You know, you think about guys like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and Stone Cold and all these guys that dealt with issues far, far, far more larger than the stuff you're dealing with for regional independent promotions, you know, that just really at the end of the day they're not gonna affect the bigger picture.
So what was it like when you first joined Tier 1 in comparison to the way things turned out over there?
So the first time, you know, when Tier 1 was putting the show together, I saw some of the people they were bringing in, and around that time of my career was really I wanted to start breaking out, and I wanted to be one of those guys that were, you know, one of those guys that were out on the scene, and that people I wanted to be one of those people that would get put on the poster and get reached out, you know, mm-hmm. to be on people's debut shows. I was vocal, I think, to a degree about getting onto Tier 1. And I had some people put in a word for me. And at the time, the show was still very, very much in its infancy, but I think it was largely booked. To his credit, you know, Dennis did put me on the show. And at the time, I think it was supposed to be an issue where he was going to get Darius Carter to come on, but Carter didn't respond in time. So I kind of got the spot that was going to be given to Carter, even mm-hmm. though Carter ended up being on the first show as well. But, you know, like I said, to his credit, Dennis still put me on the show, and I did a promo that night, and I started a program with Bonesaw Jesse Brooks. And from there, you know, we had a couple matches. And from there, while I was feuding with Jesse, I'll give Dennis credit for this, because he actually got me a lot of opportunities. He got me on the Volve pre-show, which was huge. He would get me booked on other shows that were running in the area, whether it was like a last minute thing or like they wanted to have like a Tier 1 pre-show on a show or something like that. I was one of the people that Dennis was, you know, reaching out to. He got me booked out in Ohio. He gave me a lot of opportunities, and he, you know, definitely believed in me. Unfortunately, down the line, I think he had lost the confidence in me or something. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff that went down around the time that led me to kind of disappearing. And I can get into, like, my last days in Tier 1 before I got brought back, which kind of bring everything, you know, brings everything full circle.
Sure.
So, as you know, so at one day, after I finished shooting with Jesse, she had left the company, and around that time, some of my friends were cutting ties with Tier One for different reasons, which I think I should have been keeping a closer eye on at the time. So
what were some of those reasons?
There was people that, you know, it was just people like, I know Jesse and her partner had left, and then there was other friends of mine too that were in the company. Obviously, Joey Ace got cut out, and you know, just people. There's starting to see a pattern there.
Yeah.
Still, Dennis was, you know, he believed in me and everything. And I remember one day I had a match. I was in there with, like, they were like backyard level guys. This was for another company. It was a random show, and Dennis was at the show. And I remember I was frustrated, and I just go up to Dennis and I was talking. And we were just talking, and I told him, you know, I need to get better. I want to. And the only way for me to get better is to be in there with people that are way better than me, because that's going to push me and, you know, test me and see, you know, where I belong on the totem pole. And again, to Dennis's credit, he listened to me, and instantly that night messaged me, you know what, I like what you're saying. I'm going to get you a big match for the next Tier 1 show. He gets me booked against David Starr, and unfortunately, David had an injury the night before, and he had a TNA tryout that week, so he couldn't wrestle that night. So I wrestled the replacement, last minute thing, and the match was fine. But you know, it would not have been the same as it would have been with David Starr.
Mm-hmm.
And I still managed to do a spot in that night that got huge reaction. It went viral. People were talking about it. Had a lot of focus. I got a huge reaction when I came out, and I'm thinking, all right, well, I made the most of this. I definitely got a huge reaction. Hopefully, pays attention to this.
Yeah.
So, we're going to try it again the next month. This time, I'm going to wrestle Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle, unfortunately, had scheduling issues. There was a scheduling conflict last minute. Pulled out, I think, like the day or two before the show. And then I had to wrestle Sebastian Cage. And again, I was pretty happy with the match. I did another spot that evening where, you know, I get a huge reaction. I got a standing ovation for my entrance. You know, I got praised from Damon Sandow. And again, I'm thinking, all right, this is good. I made the most of this match, and I got a huge reaction. And to me, that always should go a long way.
Sure.
That right after the match, Michael, I got jumped by Federated. Mike Orlando comes out, and it looks like he's gonna save me. It's a swerve. He beats me up. He joins Federated. And I was told next show it's gonna be you versus Orlando. And I was like, awesome, great. You know, me and Orlando were, you know, that's match I was looking forward to. We had a story there, and the guy's a fantastic athlete and a great competitor. And, you know, I was looking forward to that match, and I thought it was gonna elevate both of us at Tier 1.
Mm-hmm.
A few months go by. I think Dennis doesn't run a show. I don't think he could find the building for the winter show. So we're waiting, and all of a sudden I started seeing him post online. He announces the date for the show. Now, this isn't too strange, because he would usually go about he would never tell people usually. Like, he's pretty bad at communicating with people about, like, when the next show is, or if you were booked on it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching people get announced for the show. And as I'm watching it, I'm quickly realize, I don't think he's using me. And that's when I get a message around that time from Joe. And Joe was telling me, just, you know, in regular conversation, like, oh yeah, I got told by a certain promoter that he's not going to use you anymore. He says you're no good. He said, you know, you're a comedy act or whatever. And I'm like, wait, what? And I, you know, realized he was talking about Dennis. So I basically realized Dennis was done using me through someone else. And that was like the story of, like, he would never tell you straight up that he would, you know, that he wasn't going to use you or what was going on. Instead, he would tell other people, I guess, hope that would get back to them. which I've already, which was to me was like very shady behavior. Right? Sure. It's kind of like, that's, you know, it's not the way to go about things, but at the same time, you know, it's whatever. I got it. He wasn't a fan of my in-ring style, despite the fact that I was one of the guys that got the biggest reactions on his shows each time. You know, I got it. He wasn't a fan of my in-ring style, and he wasn't going to use me anymore. It was kind of crappy that he didn't tell me straight up, but what can you do? And then that kind of led to me coming back to Tier 1 when I saw him at Battle Club. And, you know, I was kind of, like, frustrated at this point because Dennis is doing a lot of... Hold on, I'm just going to wait for the... I have the open ring. I was waiting for the announcement to finish.
No problem.
All right. So, yeah, no, so that kind of led me to coming back to Tier 1 because at that point I was extremely frustrated because Dennis would always run to Uncle Joe and tell him I'm no good, and, you know, he would try to tell Joe how to use me or how not to use me, rather, because... He just, at that point, he just had something against me.
And that's your home gym, too, so, I mean, that's big.
Yeah, and that's when it got to me, because it was, like, now he was trying to, like, it was one thing that he was using me, then he was, like, trying to hurt my standing in other companies that he had no hand in at all.
Yeah.
So, to me, that was, like, all right, now this guy is starting to step over the line. So, I see him at Battle Club, and right before my match, I went up to Dennis, and I was just, like, I just cut a promo on him. I was like, you don't know shit. You're clueless. How dare you say I'm no good? Are you kidding me? And, you know, I'm just going off and throwing all of this in his face in the middle of the locker room. And Dennis actually was like, that night, we ended up talking that night, and then he messaged me later that night, and he was like, you know what? I really respect what you did. It showed me that you're not a keyboard warrior, and I saw your passion. I'm thinking about using you again, which was funny because he said in the thing where he was like, oh, I heard you had a good match with Simon Gotch. But he was already thinking about using me right after I'd cut that promo. Then I had the match with Simon Gotch, and that's when he was like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, I think I want to bring you back.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls me up and he tells me, you know, hey, I want to bring you back. You're going to be one of our top baby faces, and you're going to come out, you're going to cut a promo, you're going to do a quick match, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be great. I'm like, awesome, this sounds great. I'm actually really excited, and, you know, the big reason for me going back to Tier 1 was because I had a chip on my shoulder, and I had something to prove, and I kind of felt like, you know, I was trying to gain momentum with the Brooklyn audience, and I didn't want to lose that momentum. And the more chances I get to perform in front of them, the better it's going to do for me. Because those are vocal fans. Those are fans that go online and they post the shows and they make gifts. And, that's how they help you get your name out there. And that's invaluable to be able to perform in front of those fans as much as you can. There's no disservice in that, you know. So... Yeah. So yeah, I was all about like coming back and doing this, and then as we're getting closer to the return, Dennis gives me a call and he says, "Hey, so we're gonna change things up. We're gonna do this match. We're gonna wrestle this guy McDrake, and we're gonna do this." And at that point, I was already starting to get worried, just because, you know, I always try to work towards to what the card is, and not always just for myself, because I think you need to be mindful of the fact where it's like, you know, if you're on a show with a guy like a Flip Gordon or Ricochet and you're a high flyer, you might not want to do what they do, because they're going to do what they do better than you'll ever be able to. What I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always mindful to that, of where my role is on the card. And when he had me booked against David Starr, he was expecting this great match, as was I. But then when I get changed to wrestle a guy that was new to the territory and I just met for the first time, we're not going to have that same match.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing when I was going to wrestle Matt Riddle, that got canceled, and I had to wrestle Sebastian Cage. It becomes a different match than I guess what Dennis was expecting. So knowing that history, as soon as he's telling me this stuff, I'm starting to get very cautious. But again, I'm whatever, he's bringing me back, let's do it. But what was worrying me was he started to talk about doing a thing with Federated again. And that's when I'm like, all right, this is kind of weird, whatever. So I showed up to the show that he said I arrived at 6:30 for, which is, was not true. I was a little bit late coming from a job interview, but the funny part in all that, not only did I get there, it helped them to set up the show. The show didn't start for another, it was like another hour and a half. It was ran an hour and a half late for no reason whatsoever. And I just, like, coming from Warriors Wrestling, Joe will never start, will never, like, we've had no shows, we've had cancellations, we've had to change the card around the last minute. Every single show I've ever been at Warriors Wrestling, no matter what sort of catastrophe has happened beforehand, the show always starts at 8 o'clock on the dot. So to me, him not starting the show an hour after bell time was inexcusable. He was leaving the fans outside. He was in, you know. So already, you know, that's already not looking good. And that's always been a history of Tier 1 where either running the show late or having to cut intermission or always, like, stackpiling stuff on the show that shouldn't be there, just weird stuff like that. That always, like, it just always irked me because it's just at the end of the day, it's just bad business. So, yeah, so I get there and he tells me what's going on. The entire time that we're putting this whole thing together, putting everything together, not once does he tell me that I'm going to lose. He tells me that the match is going to end with I'm about to win, and then Federated comes out, and then they jump me, they beat me up. And then that was what bothered me more than anything else, was the fact that he was basically telling me he wanted to rehash a storyline that we had just done, same exact storyline, pretty much spot for spot, that we did the year prior. And not only that, but that was the last time I was ever seen in the company. So now I'm thinking, I think I just got brought in basically to put these guys over, and I'm pretty much being set up here, you know?
Wow.
That took me out. That completely took me off my game mentally, because it wasn't at all what I was expecting. I was pretty much lied to by him. And not only that, but now I'm pretty sure he's going to screw me over here. So I was actually thrown off, completely discombobulated from it. And still, you know, we were putting the match together and we're going through every single detail, but not once did we talk about, like, all right, at the end they're going to get pinned and then they're going to beat you up. I always thought Federer's going to come out, they're going to jump you. So him going around telling this narrative and, this, you know, telling people that I didn't want to lose and I had an issue losing, it's insulting to me. And it's, you know, it's complete nonsense because, like, I've lost to little people, I've lost to women, I've lost to all sorts of people. It's never been an issue for me, and it never will be an issue for me.
So when did you find out, like, what the finish of the match was going to be?
Well, pretty much when we talked about it, it was always told to me that it was just going to be a run. It was going to be a big schmoz. Like, I was going to get jumped by Federated, and then Nick was going to look like he was going to save me, and then he was going to join Federated. And that was always, like, what was in my head of what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
so what actually happened?
I messed up. What's up?
So what actually ended up happening?
So, all right, so at that point, they started coming out. I'm beyond, like, out of my element here. I'm frustrated. I feel like I'm getting set up here. So I get hit with mixed finish. And to, I'll admit that I was in the wrong for what I did at this point. I took mixed finish. I did, like, this Terry Funk cell out to the outside. And I was expecting Federated to swarm on me, jump me, throw me back in the ring, and then finish the angle. I took the finish, and then Mick comes out, grabs me, stomps me, throws me back in, and then he covers me and hasn't been covered. I'm like, what the hell's going on? I didn't know this was happening. And then I took the pin and then rolled out, and then they celebrated. So then that's pretty much what happened. And then I remember walking in the back, and I just looked at Dennis like, what the hell was that? And I was just, yeah. And then I remember him saying that, like, I took all my stuff and I changed to the side of the room, whatever, he said he likes to say that I grabbed my bag and changed to the side of the building.
Yeah.
The locker room was pissed and all this. So I go upstairs. I change upstairs in the locker room. And actually, which is funny, too, because he's talking about the whole Tom Waller thing, about how, like, he had to talk with Tom about it after the show. I actually talked to Tom after the match, and we were both talking about Kane, because that's both, you know, those both of our favorite wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no idea what the hell, like, happened. He was getting ready for his match. He was not, you know, he's not at all clued into that. Nobody in the locker room was really saying anything. Mick and the refs of Federated were in another room cutting a promo, I'm pretty sure. So I grabbed the rest of my stuff and I packed it, you know, downstairs off to the side and pretty much left at that right afterwards, because at that point I just wanted to get the hell out of there. I did not want anything to do with Carolyn at that point. And then I tried talking to Dennis that night about what, you know, kind of what had happened, and really at the crux of it was a miscommunication issue on both our ends, because we weren't sure what's going on. And if you've ever been to, like, backstage at a Tier 1 show, that's pretty much the environment of the show. You never know what's going on. You don't know when the show's going to start. You don't know when your match is sometimes, because the card will get changed around last minute. You know, and he doesn't give any sort of creative direction or anything. And then, again, I go back to those matches I had with Sebastian Cage and Curt Stallion that he didn't like. Well, to his credit, he didn't give me any sort of creative direction for it or what he wanted to see out of those matches. He just expected me to go out there and produce something that hopefully he would like. Instead, what I did was try to produce something that the people would like and remember, and try to create moments that they would, you know, that they would remember and react to, which has always been my main goal when it comes out to performing. And the same thing happened that night. I went out there, I had my entrance, I had my promo, and, you know, got one of the biggest reactions of that whole night so far. But yeah, I left right after my match, and I mean, the show, it didn't end until like 12 o'clock, midnight or something like that.
Someone's never seen you wrestle before. What do you tell them that you bring to the ring that nobody else does? Like, what makes you unique? What makes you special?
So for me, like, the biggest thing is being different. I'm always aiming to be different. And it goes back. I always look at the card. So I'm always looking for, you know, to be different, to stand out. And a lot of that is, you know, I'll look at the card and I'll see what kind of matches are on that card. And I'm always going to say, all right, well, how am I going to be different from everything else on the show? Because that's always just been my philosophy. If you do the same stuff over and over, and I think it's just gonna run to the ground. And I'm always looking for different creative ways to entertain people, whether it's something funny I do in my entrance, or one weird thing I do in my match that is gonna, like, kind of stick out and that people might not be used to seeing. You know.
Mm-hmm. What are your goals for 2018? What do you want to do differently? What's like on that bucket list for next year that you want to accomplish?
Hopefully by that point, I kind of want to stay clear of the negativity and stuff and not get wrapped up in that as much. But my biggest goal is to go and do more international stuff, more high profile bookings, you know, get to places that are getting a lot of buzz and just kind of expand from there. And at this point, I'm still looking for people that are going to push me and challenge me. And I actually have a big challenge and a big match coming up December 2nd, when I take on Dan Moff at the 10-year anniversary of Blues Wrestling. That's without question the biggest match of my career, and it's the biggest test that I've had to take. And it's people among that ilk that I'd like to be in the ring with, people like him and Homicide, guys that built the scene that it is today, and, you know, just go out there and have a killer match with Dan Moff and hopefully take that confidence and that momentum to 2018 and do bigger and better things.
Yeah, let's talk about Dan Moff a little bit, man. That guy is a monster. I mean, I saw, I was at WrestlePro a couple of weeks ago when he had that hardcore match with Pat Buck, and he's an absolute animal. It's like, how do you prepare for somebody like that?
Yeah, so, yeah, I have no idea how to prepare for a match against a guy. Yeah, like against Dan Moff, I have no idea, because I've been trying to ask myself the same question. I could watch all his matches all day, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to be ready until I'm in there, kind of thing. You know what I mean? I mean, it's almost like I have an idea of what to expect, and I kind of know what to, what to expect, but at the same time, it's like you won't know until you get in there, and there's only going to be one way for me to find out, is to just go out and do it.
All right, man. Is there anything else that you want to say?
You know what? I gotta say, man, I appreciate you having me on, and you know, I really think what you're doing is really cool. You know, you're mixing it up out there with a lot of different mediums, and that's always been, you know, one of my things for me is, like, I went to school for filmmaking, so I'm always exploring different ways to promote myself, whether it's through, you know, weird videos, or, you know, or through just new literature and stuff like that, where just the stuff that can catch people's eyes, you know what I mean? And that's what I'm always looking to do, is catch people's attention, one way or another. And, you know, it's a shame. I will say this, it's a shame the stuff that went down with Dennis. And I feel sorry that he didn't handle himself. He goes out and he calls me unprofessional with this stuff, but at the end of the day, he showed his true colors. You know, and he even, you know, he even admitted, like, he was messaging promoters to tell them not to use me. Yep. That to me is a little, that's, you know, that's very underhanded. And like I said, he admits it, just like he pretty much admits, you know, other weird things he had done about posting on Bad Wrestlers Exposed. And, you know, things, these are things I suggest people go back and listen to that interview, because it shows his true colors. It comes out of his own mouth. He says a lot of things. But yeah, at the end of the day, people, you can't let negative people get to you. You have to always keep pushing forward and try to be the best version of yourself possible. And, you know, look, we're not all perfect. I've made a bunch of mistakes in the past, but the important thing is you get up and you learn from them, and you keep, you know, you keep doing your thing. And I'm going to keep doing my thing. And 2018 is going to be, I think it's going to be a big year for the Unpredictable Jay George. I have a pretty good feeling about it.